All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Been breaking down a lot about this Rockets-Warriors series. Unfortunately, the Rockets fall 109-106 just yesterday in San Francisco. Had us up late for all that. It was at least exciting down the stretch, but that almost makes it worse the way that the game ended. I was rather impressed, at least, with the defending. It felt like the Rockets... They did have some jitters on the in their first road playoff experience. I feel like they shook off some of that as this game went along. You saw them playing some of their best basketball, but still didn't get it done. Even as we have maybe some criticism for Ime Udoka, it felt like he tried some things and there were some adjustments. And it got me to thinking, now that we're four games through this, we've seen some changes here and there. Is this a solved series? And when I say when I ask that, what I mean is I'll compare it to like tic-tac-toe, right? We've all played tic-tac-toe where you get to a point where like three moves in, you're like, oh, well, okay, this is about to be a draw. Because we both know what it is. There's no adjustments to be made. We just kind of have to ride this out to the end. And that is deemed a solved game. Is this a solved series? Is there still places for the Rockets or even the Warriors to go in this as we move to game five? On Wednesday.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it because we always talk about it's a different world, you know, because game one to game two could be completely different just in approach, personnel, you know, everything, you know, styles of defense, you know, calls, et cetera. Then game two goes to game three and then game three goes to game four. And by now you're kind of like, eh, they might have thrown everything against the wall they could possibly throw. So the question becomes,
and in some series, some series, there's still more, right? In some series, there's depth.
The question becomes, have they? You know, is there anything else that the Rockets could conceivably do? I don't know if it's like something new, but maybe more of this. I've immediately thought of a few things here, good and bad.
Let's work them out.
The good ones is Jabari, Steven Adams, and Shangoon.
Okay, so I'm guessing more of all of those?
Yes.
So you want to take these one by one?
No, and also together.
Okay.
Yeah, and also we saw some doses of that, and but really
literally like a three man lineup having those guys together, the jumbo lineups.
We've seen
I was misunderstanding.
We've seen the double big. We've also seen Jabari out there with them. I didn't mind that. I think it, you know, obviously the matchups is really tough. And I think Steven Adams, you just can't say enough about the game that he played, even though I think he only had like 7 points, but it was just incredible how many points he led to, you know, by the his defender not being able to double team Shangoon, then Shangoon scores 31, and then the kickouts and all that. That might seem more of that. On the downside,
I do want to talk about that jumbo lineup because I was very impressed that they were able to figure out how to have the big lineup out there at the same time as Steph Curry. That was one of the things. I went back to the time that these two teams met up on April 6th, which was the last time. Remember, that was the game where Steph only scored 3 points and Amen Thompson gave him hell along with the other perimeter defenders. And one of the things that was evident is that Ime Udoka, he tied the non-Curry minutes to the double big lineup. So that was a time where the double big lineup was becoming a very powerful tool for the Rockets. And even then, they were like, I don't think we can do this while Steph Curry's on the floor. Last night, we saw them have the double big lineup. In fact, the full jumbo where you have Jabari at the three as well. And they were able to make it work to some degree. It was it got mangled. It got stretched.
I like the way it looked.
Because it was basically a matchup zone. You had instances where Steven Adams had to pull out to the corner in order to make sure that somebody wasn't open or what have you.
Yeah.
But it felt like they were flying around, that they were making it work to where it was still kind of zone, and you still at times had a big in the center of the floor to try and contest shots if the Warriors were able to wiggle free and try and get to the rim. But it felt like they made that work, and I thought that was very impressive. So I'm with you. I would like to see more of that, as much as you can maybe get out there, especially if you can wring more minutes out of Steven Adams, which is, I think, a question worth asking.
And the second part of that is even just a double big, do you start a game and a half with it? The game and after halftime.
Oh, I was like, what's a game and a half? Do you start the first quarter?
Yes.
And then the third quarter with?
They got run. I mean, they got outscored 13-2 to start that game. And they got outscored 18-1 to start the second half.
Yeah.
Desperate times, man. I mean, that's what people, you know, that's how the saying came about.
Right. I think that's a fair question to ask. I still feel like you have a pretty good, and this is where I get nerdy, you still have a pretty decent net rating when you talk about your starters. Mm-hmm. Maybe that ends up being useful, but I think that changes your rotation very drastically. Because I think I go back to the Steven Adams. I don't know how much you can wring out of Steven Adams above the kind of 23-25 minutes about that you're seeing. I don't know that you can get him to a place where you're playing him 35 minutes, especially as we've gotten to a place where it's every other day.
Yeah, but at least you're starting.
In the series.
You're starting and you're putting a twist on it with a better run.
I think getting out is important, sure, but you got out in the first three games. It worked for you in one, and it didn't work for you in the other two necessarily. Mm-hmm. I think what's more important for me, and I think generally it's always more important, but I get the additional importance of starting in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What's always more important is how you close. And that's been really more concerning, especially when you consider that the Rockets have been outscored 22-10 in clutch minutes, which is like those closing opportunity moments in a tight game. And I think that's probably more important. I might maybe try and track those minutes to where you have those guys out there in that time period, as opposed to more that you start with those guys on the floor.
The last 5 minutes of the game, the Warriors had a 6-0 assist to turnover ratio.
Mm-hmm.
That was big. That was big. And here's the other thing that I think don't think you solved the zone issue just because you had a good stretch. You had a really good stretch at the end of the second quarter, I believe.
Which zone? Like the Warriors zone
Warrior
that they threw
zone.
Out there? Gotcha.
I kind of felt like we were texting about this as well. And you weren't wrong. I mean, they were knocking down some shots against that zone.
Yeah.
But then what happened? Like then in the second half when they went to the zone, I kind of felt like that was just almost not fluke, but fool's gold. They knocked down some shots and had good success against the zone at the end of the second quarter, and then they were kind of lost against it for long stretches in the second half. And they've had long stretches over the course of the series against that, especially the 1-3-1 and 3-2, which is kind of wild. So don't get caught up in, oh, we got this. Because I think they've had more issues than success against it.
Okay. From the 713, it's solved. That's a simple text there. From the 832, this has been something that people have been clamoring for since game one.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been on the side where I don't necessarily agree with it. I still think I'm in that place. But are you more open to the idea that maybe this is a potential game or play that can be made by Ime and this team? Either playing one or both of Cam Whitmore or Reed Shepherd to try and get more shooting out there. Is that something that's interesting to you? Because I know that for me, I'm not that huge on it. You had it. You finally got Fred shooting. I don't know if you view that as a game or a development. And then also remember in game three where you did lose, unfortunately, you shot 39% from three.
Mm-hmm.
Like you didn't shoot poorly. The problem was that you shot 39% from the field, which meant you were shooting abysmal from two.
Yeah.
So I don't know that, hey, you just getting these 3-point shots, or I guess in Cam Whitmore's case, just like getting this consummate bucket getter at the expense of whatever defensively you lose there is worthwhile. But am I wrong there, or do you agree more with the texter and some of the people that are clamoring for some Whitmore and Reed Shepherd?
I think that's the one point that it's very easy to say that part of this series has not been solved because we haven't seen it.
Okay.
You know, we haven't seen what they do. I think the one thing that Reed Shepherd or Cam Whitmore, can do for you is not just knock down more threes. I think knock down more threes in transition. You know, when you push the ball, they need to push the ball more.
Agreed.
They really need to push the ball
more. Strong agree.
But when they push the ball and the defense gets back, Unless Fred VanVleet is having a game like he did last night, you don't have shooters that you can kick out to. So I'm thinking maybe try that. That's the one thing you haven't tried. And that way, when you don't have success and finish at the rim, the kick out is to a better shooter.
That it'd be interesting to see if they go there from the 281. How about you just make free throws and start Jabari and make layups? The free throws would be huge. I mean, you missed 12 of them. And you lost by 3 points. There was a lot of instances where you had opportunities to knock down free throws. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, I think that also adds to, if you are making free throws, it applies more pressure to the defense to obviously play cleaner. And also it does not allow Steve Kerr to get in here and hack Steven Adams and force Ime's hand to take him out of the game. Which, by the way, I don't think I asked you about this on air. How did you feel about Ime kind of succumbing to that hack strategy and actually pulling Steven Adams in that moment where it felt like Steven Adams was very vital to what you were doing?
Yeah, the I didn't like it at that moment. I knew it was coming, but that was not a shooting situation. That was just they want to get him out of the game situation, and right. and you succumb to it. Leave him in there. Let him eat up some fouls, right? Eat up some fouls, and then when you get in the bonus, you get into the bonus earlier. And so maybe you can, we would have to shoot free throws.
Yes, yeah. That is fair.
You would have to shoot free throws. But
you might apply some foul trouble, though. I think that would be the.
Exactly, that know. Too. No, I was a little reluctant on that. Like, I think Steven Adams has had an incredible series, an incredible game last night. I want him out there as much as I can.
As much as
he can handle.
And that ends up being, I think, the question on the backside of it. As far as a solved series, this is actually, interestingly enough, a question that was asked of Steve Kerr in his post-game availability. Would you like to know what he said?
What's that?
No, like a very emphatic no. And now I'm paraphrasing what he said. He said, every game is different, and the next game could be entirely different as well. Mm-hmm. And I do think that it might be that there's not as many like shifts and counters when it comes to, mm-hmm. I don't know, rotations. I think that there might be some things that they can do kind of in the way that they go about this. Like, I think one of the things, getting into your actions earlier, mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, changing some of the ways that you screen, as opposed to like they started setting high screens, but then when the defense is going to double, mm-hmm. you know, getting a little basketball nerdy, then you might not need to send the screen as high, mm-hmm. give them time to recover, those types of things. But I also think that you had games that you were capable of winning.
Absolutely.
Like, you played, there was at least two and probably three games that I feel like the way that the game unfurled was fine. You just needed to be able to capitalize. And so as far as maybe this game series possibly being solved, maybe, but I still think that you have opportunities to win games, push the series longer, and maybe even push this all the way to seven to get a victory.
You do have to ask yourself, are the Rockets capable of winning three games in a row?
It's a tough one, but that's why you got to win the first one, huh?
That's as tough as it can get, especially one, at least one. Well, no, definitely one going back to Golden State. Here's another issue that may put a little bit of a fly in the ointment when it comes to this series being solved or not. Are we sure that Jimmy Butler's going to play?
I mean, he thought it out through this one.
Well, he had adrenaline going.
He did.
He knocked down. He had no lift in his legs whatsoever.
Correct.
All night long. He had no burst with his first step. He's just a badass, and he knocked down those big free throws at the end, but he aggravated that injury. I mean, he was limping noticeably, and after a day, and you know, he's back, you know, off his feet and traveling, and are we sure he's gonna play?
I feel like he probably will. It's a fair question to ask, but I think if they got him going on game four, I think that they'll get him ready mm-hmm. enough to go out there and give it a shot in game five. I think that that's just the way that this will go, especially because I talked about this before, mm-hmm. I think it was Friday before we got to game three, that they're going to, if they can try and put him in the game, if they're not risking anything major for him, I think they want to, because as much as I think the Rockets were close enough and have an opportunity to get victories and push the series long, the Warriors are absolutely view it as a almost necessity to finish the series earlier, because they need rest. Especially going up against what feels like it's going to be a Minnesota Timberwolves team on mm-hmm. the other side of it, who is younger and looks like they're going to get done with their series early. So if you were trying to pair it that way, they need to. Also, this is not a Rockets team you want to let hang around, because at the very least, they'll beat the ever living you know what out of you. As we've seen, the physicality has been there for this Rockets team. So yeah, I think that they give him a go if they can. Going back to game four last night, Lopez, somebody mm-hmm. on the text line texted in and asked, why didn't they give the ball to Fred VanVleet instead of Şengün at the end of the game, with him having the hot hand knocking down shots?
No,
do you agree with that at all?
No, you had to go with Şengün there. Yeah, you know, I get it. 8 3-pointers, hot hand, and all that. But, you know, you have to go. First of all, you know, that was the best set they could get into with the defense that the Warriors were in. You know, they got him one-on-one, man. They got him one-on-one.
Yeah.
You cannot ask for more than
one-on-one
that.
One-on-one with Draymond, who, and I vehemently deny or disagree with all the people that have said that Alperen looked intimidated in this game, because this is the same mm-hmm. Alperen-Draymond matchup that I saw him eat up in game one and in portions of game two or three. And even in this game, you saw him attack him. I think this is less mm-hmm. of an intimidation of Draymond Green. Understanding that Draymond Green is a good defender, and we have to give him that credit for that. But I think also it's just a portion of his game mm-hmm. is that Alperen will decide to pick up the ball a little early when he reaches contact. And I don't think that's intimidation. I think that's just something he's comfortable with, those mid-range, those like 5 to 10 foot hooks and floaters. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's good. But I think that in a series like this or in the playoffs, you have to be a little bit more intentional and looking and forcing better rather than settling for what is, I think, a decent shot. And I think in that instance, he had time to, in that final play, get into Draymond's body. Maybe you still come back to a spin as he did, but now you have Draymond off kilter and you're able to get a better shot. Or you had a possibility of maybe even getting by him on that left side to, you know, maybe picking nits for him. But I did think that was the right place to go.
Yeah,
Alperen had been good in the middle.
He missed it. He just missed it.
Yeah, that's it. It's a make or miss game, ain't that what they say, Lopez?
That's what they say.
Well, they'll be back in action on Wednesday as they try to stave off elimination. Against the Warriors back at Toyota Center. Hopefully Houston will step out, be at the Toyota Center loud, and help lift the spirits and the play of the Rockets. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next is typically the time where we hand things off to Figgy Fig for Figgy's mixtape. What you got for us, brother?
Yeah, so we got the stack one, man. Former Turkey Leg Hut owner was arrested for arson. The Cavaliers did a little arson themselves in Miami, but it might not be as bad as a loss that happened on Sunday.
Ooh,
and I will explain that.
Okay. Right. I want to hear that explained next.
Yep. It's Figgy Smith's tape in the Loop Sports Radio 610. It's your man Figgy Fig holding it down on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday to everyone out there. Before we get into the Turkey Leg Hut drama, we got to finish talking about this 100 men versus one gorilla. So
it's been going on all day.
Yeah. It's been going on for a couple days. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to my man Nick Russo for 100.3 The Bull. This guy right here.
Atta baby.
Shout out to my man right there. And he actually asked me the question. He brought it up to me. So apparently it got to his timeline too. And before I play what he had to say, I just want to give a draft profile of a silverback gorilla.
Okay.
Because
a draft profile, Mel Kiper style.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, ESPN style, because a lot of people are really thinking into this, and I want to play this right before y'all give an answer on who y'all think will win.
Okay.
The biggest gorilla ever recorded in the wild was a silverback found in Cameroon, Africa. He was 6'5" tall and weighed about 589 pounds. Although, in captivity, male gorillas can weigh up to about 683 pounds. Gorillas are so strong, with silverbacks capable of lifting heavy weights of up to 1,800 pounds. They are not to be messed with.
So I just want to throw that out there while you're sitting here thinking like,
You said up to 6'5"?
No, see, that one was 6'5".
Yeah, that was the largest, largest recorded.
6'5". He said they could
get up to 1,800 pounds.
They could weigh up to 600 some pounds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
And bench press 1,800.
Yeah, this ain't no fat sloppy man.
It's like three dudes. You know what I mean? So I'm seeing that the one silverback's like three dudes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have 100 of them?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm just noticing.
Okay. So here's Nick Russo right here. Pretty much he's on the side. He think it can happen. He think 100 dudes can take down a silverback gorilla.
Human intelligence, we've already had this fight 1,000 years ago. It was, you know, man versus beast of all kinds. And we have human intelligence. So we're going to figure out a plan to take him down. Like, we're not, yes, in a fist fight, it would be impossible. But human intelligence versus a silverback, who knows? Like,
so you think 100 people could beat, or 100 guys could beat a silverback gorilla?
I believe so, yeah. I don't think it'll be easy. A few people are going to have to get sacrificed. I mean, because you're going to distract him somehow, and he's going to be beat. Because one bite from a silverback gorilla is going to take your arm damn near off.
Yeah.
So hopefully he gets distracted, and then you can come the other way, right? Like, that's the only way. Like, it's teamwork.
He's crazy.
I do love that he's like, human ingenuity. And I'm like, yes.
Human intelligence.
There's no.
Oh, he lost me when he said human intelligence.
No tools involved here, friend.
Because I'm like,
yes.
I'm like, dog, look at this. Did you hear that draft profile?
Well, yes. And he said in a fist fight, I don't care how smart you are, how much human intelligence, still going to be a fist fight.
But
it's still going to be.
we're really just leaning on the idea that we are throwing literal bodies at this silverback gorilla.
Sacrifice.
And I do love, he's like, yeah, some people are going to have to be sacrificed. And it's always some people, and it's never, well, yeah, me and a few folks are going to have to be sacrificed. Like, that's the issue, right? The human intelligence goes out the way. when we start feeling endangered. And I know where you'll feel endangered is as soon as you stare in face to face with an angry silverback gorilla. That's when.
Yeah. My favorite tweet, because I look at all the funny tweets about this. My favorite one is somebody tweeted, 100 gorillas versus 2007 Chris Benoit. I'm taking Chris Benoit on this one, man.
Wow.
He will put a gorilla in the crippler crossface.
This is almost, but I get the argument because there are people on Nick's side.
There's so many people, though. It's just the sheer amount of numbers. If you can get everybody pulling in one direction, get some gouging of some eyeballs or whatever, like, I can get myself to the place. I just don't know about the probability of this.
Even if you have 100 dudes that can all bench press 350, he throws up 1,800. Like, they'll throw you around.
He's
going
to
get
tired, though.
So will you.
He's going to get
when
tired.
When he's swatting at you.
Not all 100 of us.
And you said, you know, if they bite you.
You can't get all of us.
If they bite you, how about he just swats your face? It'll take your face off.
All right, it's the mixtape in the Loose Sports Radio 610. So I don't know if you guys heard. I'm waiting on this documentary to happen with Turkey Leg Hut. So if you haven't heard, former Turkey Leg Hut owner Lynn Price was arrested for allegedly setting the old business partner bar, which is Bar 5015. He set it on fire, man. He allegedly hired some dudes to go gasoline it up and set it on fire.
Can I press pause real quick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you feel if you are the current owner of Turkey Leg Hut and your name keep getting dragged through the mud because he's not even part of us no more. Mm-hmm. He don't work here no more.
Well, it don't even exist now.
Yeah, it's
right.
Gone
it's fair. It's totally gone now, but his face and brand, all that stuff is always going to be, it's going to lead back to Turkey Leg Hut. But this is KPRC2. With the news and the breakdown of that situation.
Federal prosecutors say Price conspired to set fire to Bar 5015 back in 2020, a bar owned by his former business partner. He's accused of recruiting a group, including two other Houston men, to pour gasoline and ignite the fire. The indictment also alleges Price paid them afterward. In a separate incident, Price is accused of paying to have a stolen classic car, a 1975 Chevy Nova, set on fire.
That brother just all on, man,
just scamming.
The crazy thing is you can see it all on video.
Like, oh yeah,
the people just walking around with the gasoline.
I wish any of this would surprise me by now, but it doesn't,
dude. This is gonna be no pun intended, a fire documentary. Man,
I mean,
it's gonna be a great document, just
all
from
the
start,
things they've done,
man, just all the headlines they got, just being great, or just the hype for it, and just the downturn of it, man. Like, we witnessed it all
of it
within like what, 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, it wasn't even that long.
How were you this bad at everything,
right?
Like,
but they were good at it originally.
Well, someone was good at it. Yeah. It seems like old boy Mr. Price here was not that good, because from the 281, anybody notice the downfall of Turkey Leg Hut started with the new dress code? Remember who put that dress code in place?
He did.
Old boy.
Yeah.
Upset the customer base. Mm-hmm. Ran that thing down, and they started borrowing money from folks. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And then apparently you couldn't be good as a businessman. You weren't even a good criminal, man. How are we finding out that you was out here doing insurance fraud? I'm assuming that's what this was. It's not just like I'm trying to burn down someone.
It's a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, right. It's a lot of stuff. So
that is nasty work. Real nasty work.
And by the way, he got another restaurant, Oyster Hut.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to pass on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that's going right now. Maybe somebody else running it. I don't know.
All right. So if you do not trust a restaurateur, are oysters the literal worst like fare to have on your menu? If I don't trust you as a restaurateur,
yeah, that is absolutely true.
You know what I mean? Like, if it's like the Chicken Hut, I'm like, all right. Mm-hmm. I mean, It's not impossible.
Bad chicken,
but
ain't gonna kill you.
It's harder to do bad chicken.
Yeah.
Bad oysters, friend?
Yeah.
Nah, brother, I will pass on that 10 times out of 10.
No, I agree. So I'm waiting on this documentary to happen. Somebody put this documentary in the works so I could watch it from beginning
to end.
It would
be a great one. There's no question about that.
I could tell my kids, like, man, I remember I was at Turkey.
I ate there.
Yeah, I ate there before.
And they're gonna be like, why, Grandpa?
Yeah.
All right, mixtape in the Loop Sports Radio 610. Speaking of fire, The Cavaliers beat the Miami Heat.
Woo!
138-83.
You need a stronger word than beat.
They beat the mess out of
Yeah, I think
they silverback grilled them.
Yeah.
No, it's too much. I'm sorry. It's too much.
No, seriously, man. I think they was up by like 61 at one point, man. I'm like, goodness
gracious.
Wasn't
it a 55-point victory ultimately?
It was a 55-point victory.
I saw 60. Mm-hmm. It might have been more, but
they was up by 60, and then they got a couple garbage time threes that made it 60. Make it 50. Man, it was bad.
Like at that point, you should start a fight, right? Yeah. Like that is one of those. I might lose this game, but I will not lose the fight type moments. I feel like at that point, this is disrespect. I gotta fight somebody.
Yeah, and I want to say Tyler Hero said we ain't going out without a fight.
Yeah, he did.
And you know we ain't getting swept 4-0. We ain't going out without a fight.
And that's exactly what they went out with.
Yeah without a fight. And this is inside the NBA. This is halftime, by the way. This is at halftime.
Oh, no.
And this is all the jokes they had about this game.
This reminds me of a karate movie when a guy comes into the town and just start beating everybody up. It's just like slapping people, pow, pow, just coming through there. This is what this looks like, man.
This might be the worst game I've ever watched.
This is quitting at its finest right here. This like... I bet if we went to your house, all their stuff is already packed.
Well, no, it's not packed. They live in Miami.
No, you got to leave. Listen.
They live in Miami.
Dude, you lost by 38 the last game. You can't stay in Miami. You lost by 38 and you're down 40 at halftime.
You actually lost by 37.
Okay, my bad.
Game three.
If you lose by 37 then come back and lose by 40, you can't stay in town. That's you know
your,
better.
That's your house. Yeah. You live.
So just in case you was wondering, the plus differential was 122.
Oh, in the
throughout
series?
The whole series, yes. Yeah. So it wasn't just the game three and game four. It was all series.
The number of points that they lost by over the course of the series feels like it's a whole nother game.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Like it just a whole and a good one too. They put 120. That's wow. Wow.
They were down 73-33.
You know what the real indicator of how bad it is? Chuck make fun of people. Kenny sometimes make fun of people. I don't think I've ever heard Ernie
said this was the worst. Yeah. He was
Ernie Johnson
on the jokes too. Yeah.
Make fun of people so flatly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He said that was the worst game. And Ernie has worked a lot of games, man. Ernie has been there for decades. Mm-hmm. Wow.
That was the worst game he ever saw. It was crazy. But I want to, now this is a conversation we always have. Which is the worst way to lose?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather lose a blowout game like that, or maybe a close game, just a close game loss or whatever?
Sure. In terms of how you feel, I always say blowout because at some point you just resign yourself to the fact that that one's done. But I don't know if I would go as far as 60.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like this is what we got to start thinking about when people are like, oh, no, I'd rather have a blowout. No, you would not.
Not if it's that much.
So let me ask you this. Would you rather lose like how the Miami Heat lost? Or let's take it back to Sunday when the Rangers were playing the Giants.
Oh, yeah.
And this was the bottom of the ninth. First batter, I think it might have been first pitch. And this is how that game went.
1-for-2. Taps this one to third. And he sends it down the right field line. Robinson's on the move. And he is going to stop. No, now he's going to go to third. Here's the throw. It gets by him. Here comes Ramos. This game is over. The Giants win the game on a Little League home run. Tell me you've seen that one before.
I'm glad they put it on the call because I was like, oh, this is Little League. Y'all just throwing the ball all over the yard.
Yeah.
Threw it past first baseman, threw it past third baseman.
Yep. Which is the worst way to lose? Like, would you rather have that 60-point? Well, it was technically 65.
55 or whatever, yeah.
Lose like that or lose how the Rangers lost?
I don't want to lose like the Rangers lost. There's no way I want to lose like the Rangers lost.
Both of them are really embarrassing.
Now, I will say... Like, it's a little different with baseball now because it's the regular season, so we going to forget about this game tomorrow or whatever. But just in general, like, not even counting the playoff game with the Cavs and the Heat, man, that is a tough loss for the Rangers, man. To lose like that.
It was humiliating.
Was the embarrassing part. Just the way, like, it'd be one thing if it was just a regular inside the park home run.
Mm-hmm.
But dog, y'all throwing the ball all over the field, man.
It was wild.
Yeah, they got the lemon booty now, didn't they? I think I might go Rangers.
You'd rather lose that way,
dog. they was out here getting disrespected. From the 281. It was 70-25 at one point.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, you're not even in the same class.
But at least at that point,
you're done.
These guys are light year ahead of us. Like, so much more talented. It's over. We ain't about to come back and
win. You think I'm about to be happy about that? Let them fans talk crazy?
You're not happy about it either.
Hey, those fans wasn't even there, man. Yeah. It's funny because whenever, like, the Cavs turned the ball over, you'll hear the announcer, turnover, right?
Nobody's doing nothing.
It was dead quiet in there, man. I'm like, man, it felt like this playing in an empty arena.
It was a practice.
Nobody was cheering.
Yeah, but that's still your squad. If somebody come talk to you like, hey, what happened to your boys? You ain't got nothing to say. Like, at least in that Ranger circumstance, they go, hey, what happened with your boys? Hey, man, I don't know, man. They was doing so good, and then something happened. Hey, what happened with your Heat? Mm-hmm. I don't even want to talk about it. Like, you have no, there's no words.
Yeah.
There's no excuses. There is simply shame. There is just shame.
Shame.
Yeah, it was bad. All right, get you all out of here on this. By the way, USC beats UCLA.
USC won.
And it wasn't even close.
The sad part is I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Tristan, the USC beats Asher of UCLA in the first ever live stream sperm race. Do y'all want to hear this PvP?
Of course we do.
I don't, but you're going to play it anyways.
USC. Oh, they're going. They're
cussing.
Who's winning? Who's winning?
Once they enter the chamber, we are
live. Are you guys ready? Oh! Oh!
This is enormous. Jimmy is off to the races. This might not even be close.
Oh, my God.
All of those years of YouTube.
Who is that?
The feminist. The 800 credit score. Jimmy is long gone. No, his swimmers aren't even on the screen. This is a microscopic masterclass.
Hey,
they were running in a circle. They were swimming.
No, so they went through the circle,
and then they
went. They took off. Yeah. So, Tristan, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
His took off even quicker. The other guy wasn't even on the screen yet. He was just gone.
Yeah. I gotta admit,
it wasn't even close.
As much as I am engaging with this portion of the segment against my will. That's a great call at the very end. A microscopic masterclass is kind of a ball. That's kind of a great call.
This is on the screen. This is a microscopic masterclass.
It's kind of good.
They made this a real big event.
Yeah, they did.
Apparently, I want to say Ty Dolla $ign, artist performed right before it. It was like a big. It was a big event.
You could hear the crowd.
How do you feel about your career if you're like, hey, you want to do the sperm race?
You want to call that? How did USC win when they're the Trojans?
Don't feel good about that.
You ever thought about that?
Don't feel good about that.
You ever thought about that?
I feel shame. Don't feel good about that.
Bars.
Thank you.
Don't give him the horns.
Bars.
No.
You would have thought they'd have been, you know, blocked.
Now, we did bet on them, so if we would have actually bet
money.
We did. We took the Trojans.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
We would have won some money.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Well, we're done. That's the full.
We can play some more play.
Good. I think we're good. All right. That is Spiggy's mixtape. Every weekday at 1:20 p.m. right here in Loop on Sports Radio 610 at the Figgy Fig on social media. If you see something that you believe is mixtape worthy, and yes, 713. The Heat. He said karma for screwing over Jimmy Buckets. Riley needs to retire. He wins again. Jimmy Butler. Finds a way to win again.
He was in the building looking pissed, too.
He wins again. Just every time, he ends up in a different place. And he is the winner, and everybody else are the losers. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. All right. Coming up next, let's get a chance to hang out and talk with the fellas of The Drive, Clint and Ron. We will do that next. I'm now pretty concerned at how frequently I might hear the notion of a sperm race play-by-play call.
Microscopic masterclass?
On this show. That is a wild thing to think about, so I won't. What I will think about is the appreciation that I have for all of you fine folks listening all day today here in Loop on Sports Radio 610. Also appreciation to B. Scott for jumping in with us during the 11 o'clock hour. It's been a fun show thus far. Getting ready to hand it off to the fellas of the drive, Clint and Ron, here in a little bit. But before we do that, we had a text come in that said, if Philly laid down the blueprint for beating Kansas City with good defensive tackle play in the interior, then why didn't the Texans draft, or why won't the Texans draft a legitimate defensive tackle? And I imagine that that's speaking specifically to like a nose tackle type player, but obviously that interior just in general, because they did not take a defensive tackle until, was that the sixth round? Or was that even the seventh round?
I believe it was the seventh round, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was. It was the seventh round. I believe it's Keontae Hamilton, defensive tackle out of Rutgers with pick 224. And that's the only pick that they had. I was looking at Dane Brugler and the ways in which he has scouted him. And, you know, apparently there's still opportunities for growth, viewed as an ascending prospect. Supposedly good bend, hand strength, kind of belies his wrestling background. However, still needs some block recognition work and things of that nature. So it seems like, you know, interesting prospect that maybe with time and development, which it feels like you do it, you have time and you have the ability to develop. I think that's one of the things you can absolutely credit Matt Burke and D'Amico Ryans and the rest of that staff with doing very well is taking players and making them the best versions of themselves at the very, very least on that defensive side. So I like that. But clearly this is not the impact player that you talk about this defensive line, especially the likes of trying to help you get into and above that echelon of player of teams that are contending for a Super Bowl. So how do you feel about the idea that, one, just the interior of this defensive line in general, but then also the idea that they didn't add something high on the high end of it to this team in the draft?
The thing about what you just said, because I was thinking about it as you were talking, like the high end, like elite defensive tackles.
Elite?
Aren't there fewer of those than elite quarterbacks? Like truly elite defensive tackles. You know, Chris Jones, you know, Aaron Donald didn't play anymore. Like truly like game-changing defensive tackles. They might be harder to find than even quarterbacks.
Well, especially, we're seeing more and more of them.
We're seeing impact guys.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about elite.
And it's probably my fault. I think impact guys, what they're looking for, I imagine they were looking for in the interior of that defensive line. They've had guys that have played pretty damn well. We talk about Tim Settle along with Mario Edwards, who's played in there. I think you can give Fajikasi his credit, even though it felt like injuries kind of hampered his season to some degree last year. And yes, 713. The Texans have defensive tackles by committee, but it still does not feel like they have a lot of guys that they feel great about. Run stopping at that, specifically that nose tackle spot in particular. Run stopping, but then also having a level of pushing the center of the pocket and maybe even knifing up field to add in. And maybe that's because of how sparse that is, how scarce that is. How do you just, so understanding that, like I kind of understand that maybe there, and maybe we're getting to the idea that there's not a lot of those to be had. And it felt like the ones to, especially with where you were drafting, with the other things that I think you were probably focused on, maybe not using the word need, but the other places that you had some focus on, that was probably not going to be something you could address in the way that you wanted to. But how do you feel about this defensive line? Because it feels like Sheldon Rankins drops back in after a year away in Cincinnati as a guy that you have to lean upon within the rotation that you're naturally going to use. How are you feeling about it?
I think they're, you know, the question, you know, the listener was asking about, you know, the template that the Eagles have used to become that defense.
Particularly with Kansas City, against Kansas City.
Against Kansas City. I think the Texans are trying to follow that template, but just with a different approach. You know, they go inside out, defensive line, all that. The Texans are going outside in and, you know, secondary and such. Hell, they even brought over C.J. Gardner-Johnson. You know, so it's not like they're trying to do exactly that, but they're trying to be as good as the Eagles are, and I think they're working their way to there. I have no problem with it. Defensive tackle, to me, that's just hard to find at that level. Like, it's just really hard to find an impact defensive tackle.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, and they're going to depend on the idea that they have a number of guys they feel comfortable throwing in there and just doing what they do, and I do wonder if that isn't some level of luxury. Right, having your interior defensive lineman be able to generate pressure is something that, at least in the past, has been very much a luxury. It feels like more and more we're seeing some of these guys be able to do that, but I don't know that it's absolutely necessary, especially when you have the guys that you have in the perimeter. We talk about the top two guys in Will Anderson Jr. And then, of course, Danielle Hunter. But then the rotation of guys that you're going to have after it, yes, it'd be good to be able to apply that pressure up the middle, but I don't think you're having too much issue being able to get to guys, getting to quarterbacks with the edges that you have. And as you mentioned, your secondary, like back-to-front, front-to-back relationships, this is one of the best ones that you can have in the league. So we might be nitpicking just in general talking about the defensive tackles in a league that is salary capped and built in such a way where you're not going to have everything. Right. So I do understand to some degree, but I get the question. I think it's fair that, you know, that seems like that was something that they could have added. For me in particular, I think your defense did plenty this past season, and it doesn't seem like they're going to have a step down. I think what's more important is having the step up in your offense where you can confidently depend on them to score 21 points and give you an opportunity to take the already fantastic output of your defense and make it worthwhile and turn some of the losses that you had last year into wins. So appreciate you texting that in.